Welcome to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. I'm Hashim Ahbarra. Russia and NATO have been at odds for several years. Their relations have just hit their lowest point since the end of the Cold War. Russia has suspended its diplomatic mission to the alliance after allegations of spying. So is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization and Moscow on a collision course? Let's bring in our guests in Moscow. Dmitry Babish, political analyst at Russia Svobodnaya, a news agency. In Brussels, Teresa Fallon, director of the Center for Russia-Europe-Asia Studies. In Sochi, Glenn Deason, professor of international relations at the University of Southeastern Norway. Welcome to the program. Dmitry, what kind of message is Russia trying to send by suspending its diplomatic mission to NATO?
Well, most of the observers connected to the expulsion of eight Russian diplomats, members of our mission at NATO, a few days ago. But I would point to another very important occasion. The head of Pentagon, the American Defense Minister, Lloyd Austin, is now touring Georgia and Ukraine. He will also visit Romania, and he promised during his tour, as he said, he would reassure the countries which are on the front line of Russian aggression. Mm-hmm. And of course, this was taken very badly in Russia because I hope our viewers who are over 30 or maybe even over 40 remember that Ukraine and Georgia were parts of the Soviet Union. Kiev and Tbilisi are as familiar to Russians of my generation mm-hmm. as St. Petersburg or Moscow. So, of course, it was taken very badly in Russia. And I think Mr. Lavrov and Putin, they weighed all the options. NATO not only expelled eight Russian diplomats, but they also cut the number of people that we can have in Brussels. Now, the maximum is just 10 people. It used to be 30 when NATO-Russia Council was founded more than 20 years ago. So Russia decided that just having that 10 people doesn't make sense. So we better express our dissatisfaction. Mm-hmm. We better send a message of protest instead of just keeping there the people who cannot walk properly, as Mr. Lavrov, our foreign minister, said yesterday.
So, Teresa, this isn't just about a tit for tat or the Russians being angry about the decisions made by NATO recently, but according to Dmitry, this is more of a Russian anxiety about what they perceive as U.S. expansion further towards the border of Russia.
Well, I think that this is part of a long trajectory downwards. This is probably the lowest point now. We saw this beginning in 2014 with what happened with Yeah, so I would say that this has been spiraling down. We've seen expulsions from Czech Republic, all across the Central and Eastern Europe, even the UK. So there's been a huge expulsion of Russian diplomats. The Russians had never even bothered to replace the ambassador they had there to NATO. So I think that this was just kind of par for the course. It's a pity. I think it's great if they can keep communication. That's a very key issue. And also, this also means that the office in Moscow, which had three defense attachés there, will also be closed. So this, you know, valuable channel of communication is closed. But from what I understand, people aren't so concerned because Moscow will continue to speak to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. and not go through NATO. So they'll have more of a bilateral approach.
Glenn, there's never been a case of an easy ride, easy mutual relationship between NATO and Russia. It has always been a long history marked by ups and downs. But what is particular about this moment?
Well, it's been building over time, though. And I would add that the suspension of this NATO mission is not really that important anymore because NATO had already diminished the value of this mission over a long period of time because it used to have a purpose in terms of, you know, cooperation, building trust. But over the years, NATO has reduced the access of Russia to the NATO headquarters in Brussels. They need this longer notification before they come, limited access once they're inside the headquarters. And these restrictions, you know, they undermine the cooperation, they undermine trust building and subjected the Russian delegation to humiliation. So this time around, NATO expelled several from the Russian delegation and thus reducing their staff in half. Mm-hmm. And there's no indications of relations improving in the foreseeable future. So one has to question then what's the point of keeping the mission if the mission itself undermines its own purpose. And if I can just quickly add, I would also add that the NATO-Russia Council was supposed to be an instrument for diplomacy also during mm-hmm. difficult times. That's when you need diplomacy the most. But then the first time there was a conflict with the Georgian war in 2008, NATO temporarily suspended cooperation in the council until relations were back on track. So this kind of behavior from NATO has continued over time. Okay. And it kind of reveals a remarkable mentality, though, in terms of the role of diplomacy, because it's not envisioned as a tool to facilitate a compromise, but rather it's considered to be a reward if Russia is compliant. So,
all right. I see your point. Let me go to Dmitry. Dmitry, you've been talking about Russian concern about what they perceive as a genuine American threat. Now, many would say at the same time but that Russia's biggest problem is that its mindset has always been fixated around the idea of a NATO-EU enlargement at the expense of the national security of Russia.
Just until recently, a very different viewpoint was predominant in Russia. You correctly described the current feeling for Russians. But until 2014, 2015, the official theory in Russia was that we're against NATO's expansion, but we welcome the European Union's expansion. Let me remind you that Russia was against NATO's expansion in 1999, and this is actually how NATO-Russia Council came about. When Mr. Yeltsin visited Paris in 1997 and he signed NATO-Russia Relations Holding Act, basically this idea of a NATO-Russian Council was a compensation for Russia. The idea was that, okay, NATO takes in Poland, the Czech Republic and Hungary, former members of the Soviet bloc, but in return, Russia gets enhanced opportunities for a dialogue. And unfortunately, it proved to be not an equivalent exchange. Mm-hmm. I would correct a little bit my colleague Glenn. Unfortunately, it was not only the West that suspended the work of NATO-Russia Council. In 1999, when the Western countries attacked Yugoslavia, Russia suspended all the work or mm-hmm. all the contacts with NATO for a few months.
Okay.
So unfortunately, it's a very bad situation when NATO-Russia relations are the first to suffer. Whenever okay. there is a tension, instead of being the last thing to be removed diplomatically, it's usually the first that suffers. And first that is destroyed by war.
Teresa, whenever there is a tension between NATO and Russia, you just need to look a little bit further west to the United States of America and see which way the wind is blowing. And this time, under Trump, I think there was a sense of ambiguity, but under Biden and his message about strengthening ties with NATO, do you think that this is something that has emboldened NATO to take an aggressive stance against Russia?
No, I don't think NATO is taking an aggressive stance towards Russia at all. Mm-hmm. And I think that the U.S. attention has been very clear on the Indo-Pacific, especially on China. And so we saw in a recent interview with Jens Stoltenberg, he wants to, for the new strategy for NATO, that they must look at both China and Russia together, which there's a lot of ambivalence about that in European capitals, because people in Central and Eastern Europe just want to focus on Russia. Others see China rising on the horizon. And so this kind of NATO strategy will also include China and Russia. And what's quite fascinating is over the last 3 days, we saw a Russia-China naval exercise in the Sea of Japan, almost to kind of press the message even further that this Russia-China cooperation is taking place. So I think that there is concern in Europe that the U.S. is focusing on China, but mm-hmm. so they will also have to strengthen their own defense spending, and this will be difficult in a post-COVID-19 tough economy, and it will take time. There's been 30 years of really lack of spending on defense across Europe, so I think that there needs to be a real clear understanding that it's not just burden sharing anymore, mm-hmm. that there's burden shifting, and that the Europeans have to be more active in their own defense, especially in regard to Russia and in issues in the Mediterranean.
Glenn, we keep talking about the row between Russia and NATO, and but at the same time, there's this idea that apparently the two failed to agree on an understanding about how to move forward. Because now, We're talking about Georgia, about the Ukraine, about the Baltic region, about the high Nordic Sea regions. What is the problem here? Are the lines blurred to the point where the Russians are each time looking at every single step by NATO or the US to say, this is a red flag?
Yeah, well, this is kind of the main source of all our conflicts in Europe. That's, you know, after the Cold War. Well, what should a new Europe look like? And we abandoned the idea of creating a Europe with Russia. So instead, we have NATO and EU expansion to unify the whole continent. But that effectively makes them into revisionist powers. Now, the subsequent conflicts are therefore so very predictable. All those divided societies between NATO and Russia, so Georgia, Ukraine, Belarus, Moldova, all of them must choose between East or West. However, these societies are very divided, so they're ripped apart and they become proxy conflicts between the NATO states and Russia. So this is really what's driving a lot of this conflict. So it's often, you know, pointed out earlier that Russia maybe has a Cold War mentality, but it's because, you know, the West, we maintain the Cold War institutions. And, you know, at least in the Cold War, NATO was a status quo power. But from 1999, it became expansionist and revisionist by giving itself a mandate to use military force, topple governments. So it is deemed the most, the greatest threat now to Russian security. And that's the reality. And that's the assumption which the Russians are working on, which is also why they need this partnership with China is so important, mm-hmm. because they can shield themselves from the sanctions. They don't really need the NATO anymore. And this biggest project they have now is, you know, effectively giving up on integrating with Europe and instead just going east in what they're calling Greater Eurasia.
Well, because
and that's what mm-hmm. is China.
Because it's geopolitics, it's all about assumptions and perceptions. And Dmitry, for this particular reason, I would like to ask you this question about, because from a Russian perspective, there's always this concern about military expansion of NATO. But others would tell you at the same time that Russia's biggest problem, it is just not willing to see political reform further moving towards its border, because that would be the biggest challenge facing the Russian establishment.
Well, I don't think so, because if you ask Russians, do they feel jealous of Ukrainians, you know, with their president who, as it transpired, had money in the Pandora operation? No. Russians are not jealous of Ukrainians, they are not jealous of Georgians with their former president sitting in jail, you know, after being accused of putting in jail lots of Georgians when Mr. Saakashvili was in power. I mean, show me this so-called example, this so-called, superiority of any pro-Western governments on the territory of the former Soviet Union. You know, show me a country that would be much happier than Russia. There are no such countries. Mm-hmm. And talking about what you just mentioned in the conversation with Teresa, let me remind you of the figures. The Stockholm Institute for Peace Research found out that Russia's defense spending is just 24% of what NATO's European allies spend on their defense. So Europe is four times stronger. And the United States budget is 20 times, at least 12 times bigger than the Russian one. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just senseless to talk about Russian aggression against the countries that have armies 14 times stronger than ours. The same with China. If you look at the US capacity in the Pacific, of course it's much greater than China's. And of course Russia and China are cooperating for a very simple reason, because NATO mentions both Russia and China as enemies, not just as threats, but as enemies. Mm-hmm. You know, just read the recent interviews of Mr. Stoltenberg, which Teresa talked about. If you read El Mundo, his message is contain Russia and be strong with China.
Teresa,
this is not the peaceful message.
Okay. Teresa, if NATO itself was established to contain what was perceived as a genuine threat by the Soviet Union, things have dramatically changed over the last few decades to the point where people are saying, you know what, perhaps the problem was NATO, which should rebrand itself and understand that this is a new world order. And you don't need just to keep using the mantra of Russia as being a geopolitical threat.
Well, I think people really should examine what NATO stands for now. I mean, we have many partners that are in Asia. Some of the biggest contributors, Japan, South Korea, Australia, they're all partners of NATO. So we are living in a geopolitical era. And this idea that only problems in this region on the continent, I think with cyber warfare, hybrid warfare, dissemination of disinformation, the world, it's much smaller and it's a geopolitical, we need more geopolitical thinking in Europe. Mm-hmm. I looked at the state of an address of the head of the European Commission, which said that she would make it a European geopolitical commission. And it's not. I mean, she mentioned geopolitics once, and that was in regard to COVID. So I think there's a real lack of looking at the bigger picture and geopolitics. And the more that Russia and China coordinate and work together, the more Europeans really have to see that Russia and China are in the same basket. And I think that with the next NATO strategy, we are going to really see that. Jens Stoltenberg has been hinting very loudly that this is what's going to be in it. And after the when President Biden was in Brussels and they had signed the new NATO communique, it became quite clear that China, which was only mentioned once before, appeared many, many times in the document. So I think that,
which is giving many people an indication that this could perhaps be dominating the agenda and the doctrine of NATO for the years to come. But Glenn, at the same time, if NATO sometime was saying that terrorism is the biggest threat to global security, shifted that towards cybersecurity, and is this new row an indication that there is a reset in NATO-Russia relations to the point where Russia will still top the priority as the biggest geopolitical threat or challenge for NATO?
Well, it depends, because NATO consists of many states. And I agree with what my colleague there in Brussels referred to earlier, that is that these countries have different interests. So the Baltic states, Poland, they will remain very anti-Russian and they will want to make sure that NATO keeps this mission. Meanwhile, the United States would like to focus more on China. And so it really depends. But I also think that there might be some shift in thinking because, yes, it's said that the Europeans are now becoming more aware that Russia and China are kind of in the same basket, that they're cooperating closer and closer, not just military, by the way, but, you know, technologies, trade corridors, financial mechanisms. So I think, but at the same time, I think there's also many recognizing, especially France and Germany, that it's NATO's own aggressive policies towards Russia, which is causing Russia to align itself closer and closer with China as well. So I guess, you know, sometimes you have to recognize there's a security dilemma and sometimes less is more. I don't think the problem of NATO is that they've been too soft on Russia. I think there has never been an actual policy for how Russia can fit into Europe. Just as a very quick note on how the U.S. sees the world. The U.S. does not actually like a single, doesn't want Russia to have a single partner in the whole world. I mean, if Russia's too close to Germany's problem, if they're too close to Turkey, it's a problem. They don't like them being too close to Iran, Central Asia, China, Japan. I mean, there's not really a single partner Russia has in the world which the U.S. would not like to split up a little bit. So this is not a format for a stable world order.
Let's move forward to different angles here. Dmitry, what does it mean for issues like Afghanistan, for example, which is now becoming a big story, and or Syria, if you have the Russians and NATO not on the same page, this could have huge ramifications on those particular issues.
Well, nothing good will come from this confrontation. I'm sure about this. Unfortunately, there was almost no soul searching in NATO about Afghanistan. I mean, Mr. Stoltenberg recently gave an interview to El Mundo, the Spanish newspaper, and he didn't say a single word of regret or self-criticism about Afghanistan. He said, we did everything right. We defended the Western world from terrorism emanating from Afghanistan. And of course, the Afghan problem could only be solved in cooperation between Russia and the West. And I know, you know, I have been working in the press for 30 years, so I know that Russia suggested cooperation to the United States and to NATO when they entered Afghanistan in 2001. Actually, Russia helped the United States then to defeat the Taliban. The Taliban was defeated by American aviation and the Russian allies inside Afghanistan, the so-called Northern Alliance. Okay. But the United States dismissed Russia's office saying that we'll do everything ourselves. The same thing with Syria. I'm sure that the Syrian problem can only be settled by Russia, Turkey, Iran, and the West.
The key regional players who have been playing a bigger political role in those regions. Now, Teresa, when it comes to US threats perceptions, now with China testing the hypersonic weapons, is this something which is going to lead to a new focus on China as perhaps the biggest challenge facing NATO and the US in the upcoming years?
I think that's clear that they have been saying this for quite some time, that China is the biggest challenge. Russia should be worried about China's weapon systems because China is not part of any sort of non-proliferation agreement whatsoever, and they share a huge border. So although Russia and China cooperate, it's a marriage of convenience, there are also tensions in that relationship. I mean, right now they're not talking about it, but China has felt that Russia took advantage of them in the past and took over Siberian territory. So there are boundary issues with Russia and China. There are many other issues that they have problems with. And what we're seeing now in Belarus is kind of a barometer of really what's going on, because China's Belt and Road Initiative, the rail link, would go through Belarus. And that's about 85% of the rail trade that they've been pushing through to Europe. And because of Russian actions in Belarus, this is kind of causing problems for the Chinese. And they're supposed to have this, you know, frenemy relationship. But we're seeing that it would be more difficult for China to send rail cars through Belarus because of kind of what is happening between Putin.
I wish I have time so that we can continue this interesting debate about Russia, NATO, and the ever-changing political and geopolitical landscape. For the time being, Dmitry Babich, Teresa Fallon, Glenn Deason, I really appreciate your insight. Thank you. Looking forward to talking to you in the near future. That's it for the Inside Story podcast. This episode was produced by Maha Barada, Fintan Monaghan, Abdurrahman Warsam, and Jimmy Gitahan. Sound mixed by Nanda Kishore. It was edited by Leroy Messina and Lynn Gwynn and Jody Frias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again on Wednesday.